Welcome to the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, where business leaders tell their stories and share their insights. All our guests have a personal connection with Nottingham Business School. So listen, learn, enjoy, and share.
Welcome to another episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with me, Mike Sassy. Sean Bowles is a managing director at construction company Morgan Sindall, an organisation that employs more than 3,000 staff and turns over almost £1 billion every year. He graduated from Nottingham Trent back in 1997 and since then has enjoyed a very successful career in construction. When I check online, I see he has led teams that have built and rebuilt everything from schools and apartment blocks to salt barns for road gridders, I think, and even an exhibition case for one of Britain's last remaining Spitfires. Fascinating stuff. So, Sean Bowles, thanks very much for joining us here on this episode of the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast.
Hello, Mike, and thanks very much for inviting me.
Good stuff. So, as I say, there's some great stuff online, so I'll just pick out two of them. But the glass box you built for the Spitfire in Stoke-on-Trent, and then the rotating salt barn, which I think is just off the M6. Tell me about those two.
It is just off the M6. I think you can actually see it at the M5, actually.
M5, okay.
It's near the Strensham services. So that was part of a number of schemes we carried out for Highways England under the SCAPE framework. SCAPE, who are based here in Nottingham as well. So that went really well. It's nothing more exciting than a barn that stores salt, I'm afraid.
That's because you're heavily involved. You see, to somebody like me looking at it from the outside, you see this huge building rotating.
Admittedly, it does look very futuristic, I must admit, yeah. But no, it's a successful project and the client was very happy, which of course is the main thing. And incredibly proud to be involved with the Potteries Museum scheme. The link, obviously, with Staffordshire and
the Spitfire
designer is known, and it's fabulous to see the plane in position. We couldn't complete the box until the plane was in place.
So was it lowered in? Was it as it were?
Yeah, it was in position, and then we put the glass front
built
on. So yeah. But a challenging project in a difficult location, surrounded by existing buildings, but It's a wonderful facility, and I know Stoke are delighted with that. And obviously, we're incredibly proud to be involved with it as well.
I was going to say, it must make you dead proud to be involved in stuff that's so prominent on the horizon, public consciousness. Every time you walk past it, you must think, yeah, we did that.
We do. And I have to remind my wife always sort of raises her eyebrows, and I say, we drive past somewhere, and I say, well, I built that. And she said, no, you didn't. And of course I didn't.
So what are you working on at the moment that's interesting?
Yeah, we've got a number of interesting schemes. A lot of our projects are social infrastructure, so places where people learn, where they live, where they work. So we do a lot of schools, we do a lot in healthcare, we do a lot for higher education as well. We work in the defence sector. We get involved with resi schemes, predominantly through student resi opportunities. So we're quite broad. We've got some fantastic schemes. We're doing a scheme converting a Debenhams building in the centre of Gloucester, an old Debenhams store, into a university building, which is particularly challenging in terms of the condition of the existing building, but also it's on an old burial site, and we're discovering bodies at a rate of knots, which is causing everyone a lot of sleepless nights. But we're making progress, and these are the challenges that we can often face on projects, and what makes the role and the industry so exciting.
Okay, I won't ask you to comment on this, but I think everybody in Nottingham would like you to come and do something with the Debenhams in the city centre, wouldn't they? But anyway, I won't push you on that one.
That is a bigger issue, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You graduated from Nottingham Trent back in 1997, and so on reflection, what do you know? What do you know now that you, goodness, you wish you'd known then?
I guess with the benefit of time, just patience around your career. I think when you graduate, you're very keen to expose yourself to opportunity, but sometimes you have to remember you're still quite early in your career at that point, and I think it's all at that stage around gaining as much experience as you can. And just trying to be a little bit patient in terms of the pace of how quickly your career is moving forward.
Is it important to know right from the start what you want to do?
Well, I didn't. I had a few challenges in the early part of my career. I was made redundant twice as a trainee quantity surveyor in the late 80s and early 90s, which kind of made me question whether I was in the right career or not, or the right industry rather, and actually left the industry and then came back because I wanted to continue with my studies. Something pulled me back to the industry, and I think it's the people, the connection with the people, and the fact that it's a very people orientated business. Your skills as a people person can really come to the fore. Of course, it's technical as well, but that's what I enjoyed about it, and that's why I came back. But I certainly had a few challenges which I needed to sort of bounce back from and have that kind of patient, longer term view.
So a bit more patience, but by your mid-20s, mid to late 20s, you were already a leader. You were already running department businesses within construction.
That's correct, yeah. When I was, shortly after I graduated, I ended up running a subcontract organisation. So I was running a commercial painting and decorating business. We had over 30, 40 painters.
Time served, experienced fellas who were answering to this young 20-year-old.
Yeah, some of them took exception, but most of them were great, to be fair. And it was really challenging because you learn at an early age how to deal with conflict in terms of dealing with people and managing expectations, but obviously dealing with customers and clients in the first person was really, really important at that stage. And it was a chance that came my way, and I grabbed it. But also at the same time realised I was going down quite a narrow path and wanted to kind of continue with my professional education. I wanted to do my RICS. I wanted to expose myself to the broader construction industry again. And so I decided it was time to move on, and I joined a main contractor.
So you'd had that pretty much face-to-face, hands-on, in-at-the-deep-end experience early doors in your career.
Correct.
But then you took a more strategic view and said, look, I need to broaden my horizons.
Yeah.
Learning, perhaps? Or?
Yeah. As much as I was enjoying what I was doing, I felt longer term it wouldn't give me the level of opportunity that I wanted, and felt also that I needed to expose myself to different environments and challenge myself a little bit more, both in terms of technically what I was doing, but actually to see, well, what can you achieve, you know?
So how important is that for people who are just setting off in their career, people who are building their leadership career to constantly challenge themselves?
I think it's important to expose yourself to different experiences. You've got to measure that as well with a bit of patience, because not everything is going to happen at once. But I think it's incredibly important. There's certainly a period in your career in that early stage where it's all about gaining as much experience as possible. You soak it up because it'll become invaluable later in your career. And it'll also help shape which way you want to go. I defy any 27-year-old to tell me this is exactly where they want to be, and they've got a very clear path in terms of where they see their career going. It evolves, and you've got to allow it to evolve, and to do that, you've got to expose yourself to different experiences.
So now we're going to take a quick break from our chat to mention the MBA programs at Nottingham Business School. As we've learned from many of our guests, effective business leadership is about confidence, adaptability, and thinking strategically. These are the key ingredients to delivering innovation and impact in crowded, competitive markets. So if you are ready to transform your career, visit ntu.ac.uk/MBA to explore the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. We're one of only 1% of business schools worldwide who hold the prestigious Triple Crown accreditation. That's ntu.ac.uk/MBA to find out more. Now back to the show. So what are the skills that have stood you in good stead that you've been able to hone as a leader?
So I think probably my greatest asset is I'm a people person. I've always been comfortable around different types of people. I'm an only child, so I don't know whether that's got something to do with it, but I was always looking for someone to play with. At school I was able to communicate well and make friends with all different groups of people, so mm-hmm. I think that was probably a strength, and I've continued to build on that. I like interaction,
and that's not uncommon among leaders, is it? So how important, shooting that forward are professional networks now? Is that just a natural extension of how you were then?
It is a little bit. I think networking is really important, but it's got to be authentic,
right?
Because you can tell when it's not. And that can be a bit off-putting as well. So I think networking is important. Be real, be yourself, and form relationships naturally in those environments. I think if you try and force things, it's less effective.
And as an extension of that, have you had your own mentors? Are there people that you've looked up to?
Yeah, they are, absolutely. I mean, there's people that I've worked with in the past that I've looked up to, whether that be technically, and I've kind of thought, wow, I wish I could operate and how you do, particularly.
I mean, should leaders look for that kind of person, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think everyone needs a mentor. It can be lonely as a leader, and so I think it's really important to surround yourself with talented people, and not be afraid of working with people who actually you might feel are better than you, because two reasons, really. First of all, the outcome and the output of what you're doing will improve, but also it will push you forward as an individual. It could, you often need feedback, and you don't necessarily get that from above. You actually can get it from those people that you work around, and they can challenge you. And you can support, and so it's very much a two-way thing. And I've always been comfortable about working with people who I felt are really, really talented. It comes with some challenges because you've got to satisfy people's aspirations, but far better to be in that position than floundering and thinking I haven't got the right people around me, or I haven't got the skill sets.
Sure, you've got to be confident enough to, as you say, surround yourself with the people who are...
Yeah, I guess if they like you, they like you. If they don't, they don't.
But, but as long as I always used to think, as long as they're better than me, that's fine.
Yeah. Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly that.
But workplaces have changed, haven't they, over your period as a leader, 20 odd years. Very much more diverse, very diverse places. How do you think that has changed leadership?
Well, it's... I mean, undoubtedly for the better. I mean, the working environment is completely different, and you know, far more conducive to better outputs, right? Because the more diverse the workplace is, the more diverse the thinking is, you are going to get a better outcome. If everyone's thinking the same and behaving the same, on top of the fact that that can be really toxic, I think it tends to lead down as kind of very narrow avenues of thinking. So the industry is not where it should be still, okay? So we've still got a lot to do, but we're certainly seeing more females in the industry now that are having a massive impact. And, you know, I'd like to see that continue to move forward. It's not always construction, more generally, irrespective of gender or ethnicity, is not always seen as the most attractive option when people are considering their careers. Sometimes that's because it's you're on a construction site, which is a harsh environment for sure. But there's lots of people that really, really excel. And, when, you know, of course, when you see someone, particularly a female that's coming into the industry and is absolutely excels in that environment, then they're a great role model and it's great for the business.
Mm. To what extent you hinted on it there, are the social skills, classically EQ, as important as, say, IQ?
Yeah, they're both important. My EQ is probably higher than my IQ, if I'm honest. And but of course, you need a level of technical ability to have some credibility in terms of what you in terms of what your day-to-day role is. So, but EQ is important. I spend quite a bit of time trying to tone down some of my natural emotional responses to situations, and I think perhaps lots of leaders will be doing that as well, because you've got to appear calm, and certainly, you know, some of the best leaders I know, in the most difficult circumstances, they are calm, they're clear-headed, despite what might be going on under the surface. So, look, EQ is incredibly important because it gives you your instinct. It allows you to connect better with people and understand those around you more. And that's good for relationships, and it's good for business strategy as well. But you've got to be able to control it too.
Okay. And so to that end, EQ, IQ, developing your IQ, how important is continuous learning and education?
Yeah, really important. And I always felt that I would never truly succeed if I didn't secure my professional qualifications. So I was... Because I had a little bit of a disrupted career early on, I was incredibly important for me to come back to NTU to complete my degree and then complete my RICS professional qualifications, which I did. And now, as you move through, that learning doesn't stop. You know, we're faced as an industry with different challenges all the time, whether that be around social value, whether it be around the decarbonisation agenda, whether it's how we can create a more diverse workforce. These are all issues that require leaders to learn about how we do things differently. Otherwise, the industry won't move forward. So for me, that's really, really important. And again, goes back to the point around surrounding yourself with talented people who know more about some of these issues than yourself.
And so, as you know, this is a podcast for the Nottingham Business School, which is full of leaders and would-be leaders, aspiring leaders. What, from your 20, 30-year career as a leader, what one piece or single piece of advice might you give them?
Be resilient. It's difficult if you've had a knockback to tell yourself that. So try and accept that not everything will move forward in a straight line. You are going to get setbacks, but try and see the bigger picture as well. So as you move through your career, have some sort of horizon thinking going on, so you can have a plan. It might be a 5 to 10 year plan in terms of where you see things moving, and that plan may change and it may evolve into something different. But it's good to have a plan, but also that helps when you have a short-term knock or a setback, because you can think, well, hold on, this is not the end of the world. I can go again here and try and achieve my ambitions.
So yeah, have a plan. It'll help you through the tough times.
Yeah, absolutely.
John Bowles from Morgan Sindall, thanks very, very much for joining us here on this episode of the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with Sean Bowles, MD at Morgan Sindall, why not listen to previous leadership conversations with the CMO of Boots UK, Pete Markey, the former CEO of ASOS, Nick Beaton, or the CEO of Capital One UK, Lucy Marie Hagues. This episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast was produced and edited by Russell Bingley and presented by Mike Sassy.